Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode was recorded live at the Food Matters Live event held in Dublin in November 2025. Now, in this episode, we focus on the disruptive influence GLP-1 drugs are having on the food industry. What happens when more than a tenth of adults start using weight loss medication that suppresses their appetite? And how should the food and drink industry respond?
So I'm pleased to welcome Cyril Filott. Hopefully I've got that correct, Cyril, global strategist for consumer foods, packaging and logistics from Rabobank. Thank you and welcome, Cyril.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So thank you, Annie, for the kind introduction. I was here last year, perhaps at the other side of the stadium, and you hosted the panel. And I vividly remember your last question, which was, what is the key trend to watch into the future? And I said, GLP-1s. And here I am, having the spotlight and presenting it to you. Not that I'm, but still. I think this is one of the key topics that is really rocking the world in food. In the US, it also already has, and it's coming to Europe. In the UK, it is having an impact. And in other countries, it will follow soon, with some caveats, but I'll come to that. First, briefly on me, I represent Rabobank, the leading food and agribusiness bank, also with an office here, by the way, in Dublin. And I'm part of the research group that we have. We're focusing with 80 analysts on the food and agribusiness sector, on everything that changes there. If you want to have more information, go to knowledge.rabobank.com. There you can find all of our research, especially clients of Rabo, that is. The topic. It started with Ozempic, really, 2 years ago, when Walmart started to talk about it in an interview with Bloomberg, when the CEO of Walmart said, this is something that has a bit of an impact on the volumes of our business in the US. And it has grown phenomenally quick. This was in the news last week, or the week before last. Now you can get a subscription through Weight Watchers. And by the way, Weight Watchers went bankrupt in the meantime in the last couple of years because of Ozempic, but still they exist. So you can get a prescription for Ozempic or Wegovy or Mounjaro, any of those GLP-1 anti-obesity medications, and Amazon can get it delivered to your home. It is becoming so common. And that is one of the key messages that I'd like to give to you, as in it might be, there's never a certainty here, it might become very easy to get access to. US market is different market than the UK market, the Irish market, the European market in terms of regulation. I think this is important. And the other one is how retailers are acting. I talked about Walmart. Well, Walmart now has a landing page. So one of the other key messages I'd like to give is that consumers that are on GLP-1 and GLP-1s and like, but don't necessarily know what to do in terms of eating, they need guidance. They need help. They need support. So building a landing page for GLP-1 GLP-1 journey, as Walmart calls it, I think is a brilliant idea. The interesting bit, though, it's mostly supplements at this point in time that Walmart tries to sell, and not necessarily food. One step back. Where did it all start? It started all with obesity, and that people found out that the drugs that were used for diabetes actually worked to lose weight. This is also one of the first caveats that I'm going to give around GLP-1s, because the countries in orange are the ones where obesity is the highest and where the impact probably potentially is the most. So the US is obvious. The Middle East, I had no clue up until recently, but obesity is a big problem there. And for Europe, it varies per country. Obesity levels are quite high in the UK, actually in Portugal, to my surprise, and somewhat lower around the Mediterranean and in countries where they have bicycles like the Netherlands and Denmark. So the obesity levels are somewhat lower. But overall, the impact that we've seen in the US is probably not going to be as big in Europe because of lower obesity levels. So that's one of the caveats that I'm going to give you. But on the other side, I'm going back to the US. How people are addressing obesity or weight issues is basically using this pyramid. Use universal preventions like eating less, or behavior changing interventions is going, more exercise. And especially in the past, people would recommend GLP-1s or any other weight loss medication for intervention, specialist weight management services, going to a nutritionist. Up until June, when the College of Cardiologists said in the US, you should use GLP-1 as step one instead of step three. So again, to show how big the delta is in the US and how big this market is potentially coming to be. So we should be paying close attention to this. And yes, again, caveat, European markets are very differently regulated in terms of medication use, but still. So this is an important one. The other one that I find really important, and this is going to this is more talking about the potential of this market, is the pipeline of drugs that you see currently being developed. And so we know about Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, all those drugs. The first one, the one by Eli Lilly, which is very difficult to pronounce, which is typical for all these drugs, is a pill. It's not an injection. It's a pill. The efficacy rate is lower, so the weight loss is lower, has been shown in phase 3 trials, but I still lay Weight Watch around close to double-digit percentage weight loss. It's a pill. I think this could change potentially the market again. You can imagine that in the future, when these are really, it depends on the regulation, but you in the morning wake up and some people will have a vitamin pill and another pill for weight loss management next to each other in the morning. Could be. Don't know. But that's the thing that is really interesting. Others are working on the Novo Nordisk one that I highlighted in blue. Has actually, I think the weight loss percentage is 22% for people on this one, which is phenomenal. The impact is just truly, truly big. And then there's everybody jumping on this market because we've seen what happened to Novo Nordisk and what's happened to Eli Lilly. By the way, Eli Lilly announced, I think yesterday, that they're going to invest $2.6 billion in my home country, the Netherlands, for another factory around this. There's a lot of money being spent on this. And it's a bet because we don't necessarily know what the adoption rate in the future will be. But I think it is really interesting how quickly the adoption rates are. So what are the adoption rates? In the US, 12%. But there's some rumors and some mumblings that this is plateauing, this, and I'll come to that later on, why it might be plateauing as well. But around 12% of the adult population might be using one of those anti-obesity medications. In the UK, which is the largest market currently in Europe for these type of drugs, it's around 4%. So it's accelerated early last year, really. So 4% of the population. From a food point of view, how to think about it, and perhaps it's now 5% or 6%. And actually, I talked to one of the retailers in the UK who said it could be close to double digit now for that particular retailer. So it depends a bit on which segment you're working on. But how should we see this? Well, the number of vegetarians or vegans, 5-6%. And there's particular products for that audience, that segment in the supermarket or in food service. So I think this is a market already worth catering to. And it was interesting to hear that Tesco has these discussions already with suppliers about changing the offering or having a tailored offering for this. There will be a lot of these tailored type offerings to come going forward. This is the study that probably some of you have already seen, or most of you have already seen. But this is the big study in the US, again, going back to the US, that showed what the impact is on food spending. The study is called No Hunger Games. It's done by Cornell University. Download it. It's a massively interesting read. What they track for a large population of people, of which at least one person was on anti-obesity medication, the spending patterns on food. First conclusion, -6% in terms of spending. This is value, not volume. Volume might actually be even down more, and there may be a value opportunity here. But that's the first conclusion, which is an interesting one in itself. And I think this was already to be seen in when you looked at the publicly announced results of retailers and especially food service companies in the US and also their supply base into the US. US companies have had a tough time. And no, it's not the entire population, but they really have felt the impact already of this. Categories that are hit, you know, makes a lot of sense. Chips and savory, the snacking opportunity in general, which is the first two ones, the snacking opportunity has been impacted. Size makes also sense because of the portion of what people are willing to eat or have cravings for. Think about portion size, though, immediately. I think this is one where you can get and entice your consumers to buy something something different. And salad dressings, not entirely sure why that is one, but it was one of the worst hit categories of them all. On the opportunity side, there were only four categories of food that were in plus territory. And we've already touched upon a few times, protein. Whether it's yogurt, and Danone was here, but the Oikos brand in the Greek yogurt brand is doing phenomenally well in the US market right now. Fresh produce, healthier solutions, and also the halo effect that was talked about a bit before, perhaps, because the entire family eats and eat healthy. Meat snacks, which is perhaps a US thing. There was a boom-bust cycle in jerky, as you may remember, but other types of meat snacks are coming back in terms of sausages. For example, snack sausages, and nutrition bars, energy-dense, nutrition-dense type of food that people can have to still keep their nutrition going because they are not necessarily hungry. And they still need to have all those macronutrients and micronutrients. And protein, of course, is because of the perception that people need more protein because they lose muscle because of their weight loss and the associated lose of muscle with that. Not entirely sure whether that is science or just perception. A lot of this is, of course, perception. But the thing with yogurt is it's a spoonable snack. So it might replace, for an American consumer, a donut at 3 p.m. And just have a small cup of yogurt instead, which contains the protein, is healthy, and may help as well to break the day in principle. So this is one of the big studies out there that everybody has been referencing to. This was the preliminary draft of that study. I think a final draft will be out soon. I've seen a copy of that. It's the conclusions, by the way, will not change and not change much, but they will go a bit more in depth on some of the detail. So worth looking and reading because it's a great starting point to have a discussion internally and also with your stakeholders on which categories might do well and which might not do well. Well, UK, back to the UK, Kantar did a survey there. And some of the highlights there is that the amount of users doubled. And this was in August 2025. And again, I think the number is higher now. It's probably around 5%. 25 to 35% fewer calories. I talked about 6% per household spending less on food. This is the calorie, actually, the amount of calories that the person that is on GLP-1s is eating less. 25 to 35%. I think this is a massive, massive number. And then you see the impacts overall. Pizza, interestingly, takeaways, perhaps a UK thing, but still a massive reduction in spending on that. And also snacking. The other one is that alcohol consumption is only mentioned by 23% of the people. Initially, people thought that there would be a lot of suppression of cravings around alcohol. But both this study and this study showed that, yes, there's some impact, but it's not the impact that people had expected before, which is alcohol, by the way, is not going well at all. The beer consumption, wine consumption especially, is going down the drain quite dramatically in the US and Europe, but it's not necessarily driven by this. There's other reasons why that is happening. But basically, the insights from the UK are similar to the US. It's a smaller group of people. But as I said before, 4%, 5%, it's really an audience that needs talking to and needs an offering, wants to get help on the journey that they have embarked on. So what are food companies doing? It was the first one to actually act on this was Nestlé with their Vital Pursuit range. And that was pretty, I think, early 2024 when they came out with this range, not necessarily mentioning GLP-1 front of pack, but really talking about, that this could help in weight loss. And the same is with Conagra. And this is also from almost a year ago, when they talked about GLP-1 friendly type of food. And this is the interesting phase, I guess, where we are now. How do you market this product? And I don't think the market really knows, because is there shame associated with the use of GLP-1s, or actually are people proud of it? So can you put it front of pack, or should you just put on the label or front of pack, high in protein, high in fiber, energy dense or nutrition dense? That's an interesting one for the marketing people in this room, as in how do you properly market this? Because again, I reiterate it again, the consumer needs support in their journey. but how do you actually tell them the message that that your product is going to help them in the journey? So GLP-1 friendly could be a phrase. I'm not sure, but I think it's an interesting experiment and we might see more of them. And I talked about Weight Watchers and Weight Watchers going bankrupt in the US. There were other reasons why Weight Watchers went bankrupt. By the way, the debt load was phenomenal, I say, as a banker. But they do have a challenge here because the raison d'être, the reason that why they existed, was to support consumers to lose weight, not necessarily through medication. So they're all trying to pivot and come to models. But this is about communication again. This is about communicating the story around GLP-1s and what type of nutrients people need to the user, really. Two final thoughts, which makes this even more complex, for me at least, to analyze and also to follow the trends. And also perhaps some new ones to a story that could potentially become really big, as I said before, depending on the regulatory environment. And that is usage. What are users going to do? We don't know. I think it's too early to tell. Could it be that people will use these type of anti-obesity medication only once? Could be. Then what we've seen, as science has looked at this, is that people bounce back and they gain back about 66%, two-thirds of the weight they lost. They gain back quite quickly, actually. And there's also surveys out there that people that are on GLP-1s, they've been asked, what will you do when you stop using these anti-obesity medication? The first thing they like to do is go back to quick service restaurants. So to go back to McDonald's or Burger King. So there is something missing that people are still looking for. So, but how does that work? And will then people move to multiple? As in up and down, okay, I'm gaining weight. I had a very interesting discussion with one of the largest food companies in the UK about this. And there's a lot, by the way, in the UK, in the grocer currently, about tracking the sales of food around Christmas and whether GLP-1s will have impact. Much more interesting for me is January, as in what will happen that people will indulge during Christmas and on January 1st or 2nd start. I'm not sure whether that's even possible, given, but perhaps it's possible. I think January will be the month to look at and not necessarily the Christmas period, because food has a social function. It's not only about weight loss. So, but it could be that people will be on multiple, as in, okay, can I use it? I'm gaining weight back, I'll use it. I'm not talking about side effects, that I'm not a doctor, so I don't know how bad or good that would be for you. But that is a regime that people might actually undertake. Taking one step back, as a food company, how do you play into that? I don't even know. Because, you know, you might support them on the journey for a number of months, and then they go off. And then, so how does that work in terms of marketing and helping them, especially in those direct-to-consumer models? And then there's the maintenance model, where the pill, by the way, which I talked about in the beginning about, could be helpful. That people will go on, lose a lot of weight, and actually go to a maintenance dosage, whether that's a pill or still an injection, but a maintenance dosage, and therefore will have a structurally changed diet. Because with once, it's a one-time change diet. With multiple, it's just up and down, as I said before. So they might, the consumer and the user might have multiple, you know, phases of using certain foods. And on maintenance, they might be steady and change their diet forever. Again, don't know about side effects, but I do know that this might be a scenario, and this is perhaps for food companies the biggest one to look into. This might be a scenario in 5 to 10 years from now where you can cater to this maintenance type of audience, that people that have lost their weight but do need some type of medication to stay on that low level. And then lastly, it was touched upon this before as well. I think this is the other one that is bubbling to the surface now. What do these medications do? Well, they affect taste. They affect, everything, really, in terms of how you perceive food. That's an interesting one. So I've already talked to a few companies that are trying to change the setup and the makeup of their products. Because if you are a confectionery company, you make sweets. Well, sweets, sweet stuff may actually be, you know, perceived as really sweet. So lowering the sweetness level. Someone talked about textures. Someone talked about colors as well. I think those type of insights will follow in the next few years. But it's definitely something to look into, because this could be really important and changing for the food sector. So again, this is work in progress for many of the scientists in this space. But I think I believe strongly this is another important trend to follow. Wrapping up, anti-obesity medication might or will gradually become part of lifestyles. 5% of the population in the UK now, and don't forget, the vegetarian audience is about the same size. It's already worth catering to. If those medications become more common, go off patent, freely available, it could become really big. The impact on food consumption among users is significant, both in terms of how much they spend and in which categories they spend. I think that is both are really, really important. And then we have some of these changes that might be caused by, you know, lower appetite, but also by the perception of food. Something to need to be tracking. And lastly, my final message to you, it really is time to start preparing, because I'm pretty sure this is not going to go away. I only unfortunately can't answer the question how big this will be. Thank you. I have time for, Annie, I'm looking at you. I have 3 minutes. So 2 questions I've been signaled. So Nadine will run around with a mic. I'm happy to answer any questions. There's one over there, the lady in red. Name and company here, please.
War, right? Yeah. Sorry, my name is Jane and my company's Man's Marketing. So I work in the food industry with a lot of small food producers, but also work with hospitality. So my question is for hospitality, because I'd heard, you know, with people eating less, and I heard in the States that a lot of restaurants, they've had to increase the price of starters and different elements of their menu because the spend in the restaurants is going down because people aren't as hungry. Yep. So I suppose my question is the impact on the hospitality sector in particular.
Yes. So let's take this broader food service and come back to smaller. So the impact on quick service restaurants in the US has been phenomenal. And they've been struggling. It is difficult because there's other things happening as well, like disposable income crisis. So people go out less anyway. But McDonald's and others are really, really, really struggling. And it's partly... Well, it's the volume element that is hitting them. Restaurants and corporate caterers have the same issue, as in volume is declining. The opportunity is in tailoring your menu and hopefully being able to ask a higher price for a certain offering, because the consumer that is on these drugs has more need for healthy, you know, healthy food. So it's a volume value equation that needs to be played. So that's why I said, when I showed you -6% for the US, I think volume could actually be even lower, but people are buying different types of foods. But overall, the volume decline will be bigger than the value increase. So the overall impact will be huge. Address the menu, reformulate the menu, tailor to the audience. I think this is really an opportunity for a certain part of the audience. I read a story about how many companies, food service companies, are seeing an increase in children's menus because people are just buying smaller sizes. But perhaps you can offer something tailored to that audience that now has to resort to a child's menu. I think that's where we need to go. So lower volume, up the value. Lower volume, up the value.
Hi, Michelle Daly-Lennon from Kerry, Derry, Ireland. You mentioned the difference in the different markets around the regulatory environment. And obviously, these drugs are not reimbursed at the moment.
No, correct.
So looking at the US market, where you've got 12% adoption rate, I'm just keen to understand, are those drugs reimbursed there? And have you modelled anything that looks at when these drugs come off patent? When is that? And also, if they are reimbursed, what is the uptake likely to be?
Oh, so this could take another half hour. So first, US, mostly not reimbursed. The households where this is being used usually are 4 people on average. So families with 2 kids earning more than $100,000. So it's more the more affluent people that are now able to get this. So in terms of reimbursing, in the UK, I showed you the NHS numbers and private numbers. So private is not necessarily reimbursed, but depends a bit on the situation. NHS might be. The challenge there is that the systems in some of these countries are just working too slowly. The NHS actually in the UK wants to increase, but bureaucracy really is hampering growth there because it's part of their bigger plan. I read a story, this was probably a year ago, that the NHS wants to offer these types of drugs to people that are long-term unemployed to make them move, to get more action into their life. And then, so it's broader benefit to society. So that is the second point. And then the third question you had was patents. So some of the components of the drugs will go off patent in Canada and Brazil, and I believe India in 2026 already. So we might see, but I don't, I'm not a doctor, and I'm definitely not a, someone in, into the in the medication profession. So, but we might see some cheaper alternatives coming to the market because some of the components come there. That is also why, and I showed you the pipeline of drugs, these companies are working really hard to come up with new, better versions of this mousetrap with lower side effects, higher rates of weight loss, and so that they can replace, so fend off basically the threat from these drugs going off patent. But that's a space to be watched. And next year, so we'll, we might see in some countries the first signs.
Cyril, thank you so much. Really insightful. Really insightful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Before you go, we have some exciting news to share. In 2026, we're hosting two major events. We'll be in London in June, and we're back in Rotterdam in September. Visit foodmatterslive.com to register and join us as we inspire the future of food.